to the congressional leadership and law enforcement officials discuss revisions to Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act conference call. My name is Cheryl, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Nicole Fortier, Senior Coordinator of Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration. Nicole, you may begin.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us here today. As the operator just mentioned, I am Nicole Fortier, the Senior Coordinator to Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration. And we're gathering here today to make sure to help explain why law enforcement officials are being very vocal about their support for the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act and why they believe that this bill will reduce crime and incarceration while promoting their foremost concern, public safety. As you may know, our group and our members have launched several letters supporting this bill in particular. Two letters with 130 police and prosecutors have already gone out in support of this bill. And NDAA recently released another letter, a partner organization of ours, supporting this bill. So we're very excited to have a moment here with you today to explain why law enforcement thinks this is so important. First, we're going to hear from Senator Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, one of the chief architects of the revisions announced yesterday. Senator Lee, please speak now.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all of you for being here. Thank you for your interest in this important legislation. We've made some major strides with this bill, and we're making significant progress toward getting it passed. We've added another five Republicans, which is a major feat in and of itself. We've made a number of changes to the bill to focus on the fact that our efforts here with regard to sentencing reform deal basically entirely with low-level, nonviolent drug offenses. So we have removed entirely prior Section 105, which dealt with the armed career criminal statute. We have also made clear that there will be no retroactive relief for any offender who's been convicted of any serious violent felony. This is an important feature of the bill because some of the most significant attacks in recent days and recent weeks have come from those who are claiming that this statute, this bill, if it became law, would somehow make it possible for violent offenders like Wendell Callahan to get out. Wendell Callahan was a violent criminal. Wendell Callahan had a prior conviction that would have qualified as a serious violent felony, such that if he were subject to this law, he wouldn't be eligible for any kind of retroactive relief as a result of it, for the simple reason that he had a serious violent felony conviction. Moreover, even if he didn't, even if that somehow, that offense, his prior conviction, had not qualified somehow as a serious violent felony, which I believe it would, for two additional independent reasons, he would never have been granted retroactive relief under this bill. First of all, the judge would still have to review his background to make sure that the totality of the circumstances involving his background wouldn't make him a threat to society. Secondly, the U.S. attorney would have the opportunity to weigh in. And the U.S. attorney, having reviewed Wendell Callahan's case, would have certainly seen that his case would not have been an appropriate one for retroactive relief. Look, the bottom line is that this bill, especially as amended, makes very modest adjustments to our minimum mandatory sentencing laws as they relate to low-level drug offenses. Our laws in this area have gotten out of control. They've produced disproportionately large sentences. This has contributed to a nearly 900% increase in the federal prison population since 1980. The sponsors of this bill are not opposed to minimum mandatory penalties in the totality. We're not categorically opposed to them. But we, like so many other people, understand that at some point between one day and 1,000 years, you cross a threshold beyond which a minimum mandatory sentence can be excessive, especially as it relates to a low-level drug offense. And so I invite all within the sound of my voice to join me in this cause to help us pass the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act.
Thank you, Senator Lee. And now we wanted to hear from Ronald Servas, the chairman of Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration and the former superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department.
Thank you, Nicole. Good morning, and thank you, Senator Lee, for your opening comments. My name is Ron Serpas, and I'm the former superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department, chief of police in Nashville, Tennessee, chief of the Washington State Patrol, currently a professor of criminology at Loyola University, New Orleans, and chairman of Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime and Incarceration. Our leaders unite over 165 current and former police chiefs, sheriffs, federal, state prosecutors, and attorney generals from all 50 states to urge for a reduction in both crime and incarceration. While it seems counterintuitive, we believe the country can reduce incarceration while keeping down crime. And we also support changes to our criminal justice system to achieve that goal. One of our priority issues is to reform mandatory minimum sentences. I'm here today to call on our lawmakers to pass the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act with the compromise language. It's an honor to be on the call today with former United States Attorney General Michael McCuthy and several other members who will speak to you soon who have participated in our group. As members of law enforcement, we have dedicated our careers to protecting public safety. We know from our experience that good crime reduction policy is not about putting a lot of people in jail. It's about putting the right people in jail and achieving crime reduction at the same time. That's why our members of our group, law enforcement leaders, support the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act, a bill that we believe will make common sense reforms to current federal mandatory minimum sentences to ensure we are putting the right people behind bars. The new compromise sentencing reform bill is a significant step towards putting those right people in jail and reducing incarceration rates for people who do not need to be there. Those are the low-level nonviolent offenders. This new version of the Sentencing Reform Corrections Act narrows the scope to ensure that criminals with a history of violence and serious drug felonies do not benefit from any of these changes. But it also leaves intact significant reductions to mandatory minimum sentence for low-level nonviolent offenders. Our organization would respectfully call upon Senator McConnell to bring this bill to the Senate floor for a vote. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Ron. And now we are turning it over to Attorney General Michael McCuthy, who served as U.S. Attorney General under President Bush.
Thanks, Nicole, and thanks to Senator Lee and to Ron for their comments. During the time that I served as Attorney General and as an Assistant U.S. Attorney early in my career, and as a district judge for close to 19 years, I oversaw thousands of federal prosecutions. It was my job to ensure that violent and dangerous offenders were held fully accountable and taken off the streets. And I know from that experience, including serving as Attorney General and serving as a judge, that keeping our communities safe is not about locking up everybody. It's about locking the right people up and keeping them locked up. And I've been very public about my support for this statute, the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act. I testified both at the committee hearing and at a recent briefing that was hosted by Senators Grassley and Lee. I believe that the Sentencing Reform and Corrections Act recalibrates our current sentencing policy and makes appropriate adjustments to focus on violent and dangerous offenders while easing some of the penalties for low-level offenders that's appropriate, given their history and given what they did. The changes of the Sentencing Reform Bill proposed by members of the Judiciary Committee narrow the scope of reforms and put greater focus on violent criminals. The compromise bill that's been announced today is going to enhance public safety by allowing the government to target its law enforcement efforts where they're really needed. The Bureau of Prisons budget occupies an increasingly large proportion of the Department of Justice budget, and that has to be cut back and that money used for enforcement if our communities are going to be held safe. The widespread support that this bill has received in the law enforcement community, I think, should allay concerns about the likelihood that there's going to be any mass release. I think that's simply not going to happen under this bill, and I would urge Congress to pass the bill promptly. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Attorney General McCuthy. So in addition to the speakers who you've already heard from today, we are also joined by former U.S. Attorney for the District of Utah, Brett Coleman, and the former U.S. Attorney for the District of Nevada, Richard Parker, who we believe are also clearly experts in the field and are supportive of the bill. But before we open it up to questions, I just want to say, if you have a question, please let us know if it's directed at a particular person. If not, I will direct it to whomever may be best to answer that question. And operator, we are now ready to open up for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up your handset first before pressing any numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. Standing by for questions. And our first question comes from Bill Teller from the Marshall Project. Please state your question.
Yeah, it's really two short questions. One of them is there a text of the compromise bill available? And the other one is, has the Sentencing Commission or anybody else done an estimate of what the impact of this legislation would be on the prison populations, federal prison populations?
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. I believe Senator Lee may be the best person to speak to the Sentencing Commission, although I will say that the Sentencing Commission previously did an impact study and outlined how many people would be affected. And my understanding of these changes were that they were meant to limit certain provisions but expand others to the same number of people would hopefully be affected. But Senator Lee, do you know those specific answers?
You know, I believe that there are an estimated 5,000 people who could possibly be subject to these provisions, could possibly benefit from them. It's also my understanding that there could be some overlap between those who might benefit from the changes brought about by the Sentencing Commission and the changes by this one. I'm not quite sure the extent of the overlap. That might be something that Brett Tolman could help us answer.
Mr. Tolman?
Yes, I'm happy to weigh in. It is, under any analysis, it's modest, and I think the senator is correct that there may be a few thousand that are able to participate. What the Sentencing Commission has done will not have a direct impact in these specific areas going forward. And so I don't think that the two don't overlap as much as we might think at the outset. Under the new provisions of this bill, there, in many estimations, would be a few thousand that would immediately be able to participate. But then again, we still have the involvement of the U.S. Attorney's Office and of the courts, depending on whether it's Title I or Title II that we're talking about.
Can I follow up?
Sure.
The earlier version of the bill made the Fair Sentencing Act retroactive, which by some estimates would have made some more close to 6,000 people eligible for consideration. Does the bill no longer make the Fair Sentencing Act retroactive?
So the current bill continues to do that. It actually, just to sort of summarize the changes so far, broadly speaking, it ensures violent offenders do not benefit from reduced sentences while expanding relief for other low-level nonviolent offenders. So what it proposes now as new language is striking all changes to the Armed Career Criminal Act and limiting changes to other firearm provisions. It substantially limits retroactive application of the bill to current prisoners to exclude violent offenders, and it creates a new mandatory sentencing for offenses involving the drug fentanyl. It also expands application to low-level offenders by, for example, limiting use of sentencing enhancements when offenders cooperate or have previous convictions for minor crimes. The remainder of the bill largely remains the same, including the provision you were just referring to. That is completely intact as it was.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions?
Yeah,
once again, if you you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And speakers, at this time, I show no further audio questions.
Okay. Is there any lingering question out there before we leave?
This is Michael Mukasey. I just wanted to stress the last point that was made in response to the earlier question, and that is for people who are currently incarcerated. The retroactive application of this bill occurs only when even those who are eligible have their cases reviewed by a U.S. attorney and considered by the sentencing judge. They don't automatically qualify. They don't automatically get the reduction. They get it only after a hearing before the sentencing judge in which the government participates and can be heard on the question of whether somebody ought to be released or not.
Thank you. And Mr. Parker, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I would just observe that as a former law enforcement official, I'm part of a very large and interested and influential alumni out there. Even though I'm in the private practice now and most of my interaction is with private business, I can tell you that everyone I've discussed these issues with is deeply interested in getting some sort of reform and frankly, believe that, as outlined, this is the best approach to go, because precisely as the general said and Mr. Serpas, this does not free legions of violent criminals to roam the streets. It's an extremely measured approach, which is, in essence, really just a correction from some of the unintended consequences of what at the time in the 1980s and early 1990s was a very effective way to get a violent drug environment under control. And a lot of people who have never even served in law enforcement or served long ago are watching this issue closely, and frankly they're always very encouraged to know that people from both sides of the aisle in a bipartisan fashion have put together something so measured and in the end almost guaranteed to be effective. And I think the Senate needs to keep that in mind, and hopefully they'll pay attention.
Thank you. And Mr. Tolman, I wondered if you could maybe speak a bit about what your reasons are for supporting this bill.
So it's been my honor to work over the last several years with Senator Lee and his leadership and Attorney General Mukasey, whom I have deep admiration and respect for. Both of these individuals are conservative, law and order, and very intelligent individuals that I've had the honor to work with. I will say that this bill, we comment often that it is modest, and while it is modest, and there are other changes that certainly could be made over the coming years, it is incredibly important because it fixes some malfunctions in the criminal justice system. And for those of us that have been in the trenches, who have sent individuals to jail for long, long terms of prison sentences, these malfunctions are important to fix because it alleviates pressure on the budget, it alleviates pressure in our offices when you work in law enforcement to be able to utilize these resources in the most critical way and to address the most important problems. So it is my hope that Congress passes this, and does so immediately. This is something that has been, this is half the measure of those efforts in many conservative states that have already proven successful. And the federal system needs to wake up and get it done immediately.
Excellent. And Mr. Serpas, I was wondering if you could explain, of course, we know that most incarceration happens on the state level. I was wondering why you could explain why the federal government taking a step here is really important.
Well, we believe as police chiefs at the local level and as a former state police chief that the federal government provides leadership. And when the federal government steps forward and provides leadership over the last several hundred years, many states will tend to follow. So in this case, not unlike we just heard, many of the states of the union have already moved forward with meaningful reform to sentencing with positive results that did not release people to the streets who didn't deserve a chance to be released after reviewed and did not cause crime to increase. What police chiefs in America and what we know from polling on the question of pretrial release is that the American people judge very carefully and generally are very supportive of what police chiefs mention or talk about as it relates to crime in America. And that's why our group is so important. So not only do we have prosecutors and corrections officials, we have police chiefs from virtually every size police department and from all 50 states who are saying that this kind of bill can help us to make our community safer than we even are now at 30-year lows, 20-year lows in safety. We think we can make it even safer by giving us that precious time and resource, giving us that jail space that we need for truly violent offenders and find alternatives for those who incarceration is simply not the answer.
Thank you. And Senator Lee, we've heard that some are concerned the Supreme Court nomination has and will continue to sidetrack this bill. Can you address that concern?
Sure. I actually think quite to the contrary. This is going to help get this passed because Democrats and Republicans alike, I think, are mindful of the fact that this needs action. We need to act in this area. We have inefficiencies within the federal criminal justice system, and we have widespread perception problems that are rooted in reality that need to be fixed. This is one area where we have a lot of bipartisan consensus, and where such consensus exists, it needs to be taken advantage of, and I think that's going to happen here. I think that's going to be part of what helps us get this bill passed this year.
Excellent. And what are the next steps for this bill? What do you foresee as a timeline even for passing it?
Well, we need to get to the point where Leader McConnell agrees to bring it to the floor. If we can get him to agree to that, and I think we're getting closer and closer to that point every day with how many Republicans we've added to it, then we'll know when it's likely for floor consideration. So we've already had it pass out of committee. That happened several months ago. Passed by a bipartisan supermajority of vote of 15-5. And so it really is ready to go to the floor as soon as we can get Leader McConnell to make that decision. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that every day as we keep adding Republican co-sponsors.
Thank you. And Attorney General Mukasey, I wonder if you could address what some see as in sharp increases in crime over recent years. Should we be cautious about making changes to sentencing when crime appears to be rising?
To the contrary, I think that what any perception of rising crime suggests is that we should focus our efforts on enforcement. What deters most is certainty of prosecution and some length of confinement. Whether it's 5 years or 10 years matters less than whether somebody gets caught and dealt with. So this will allow us to refocus our efforts and to assure that the people who ought to be incarcerated are, and that we have ample resources to devote to investigation and prosecution rather than simply to keeping in jail people we've already got, some of whom may not belong there.
Thank you. And I just want to ask one last time if any remaining people on the call have any questions for our speakers.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And speakers, at this time I show no audio questions.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank everyone once again for joining us today. I think you can really see that law enforcement truly backs this bill, that we are excited to do so, and that we see it as a means of helping to reduce crime and reduce incarceration, while of course keeping public safety at our foremost concern. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope to hear from you all soon. We are happy to do any follow-up conversations after this. Just let me know, and I can connect you to any of our speakers. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.